Just say one final comment about this whole nostalgia, because I have been thinking about this distinction between nostalgia and retro, and also about this thing that Andrew said about meta nostalgia.
Somebody wants retro chocolate.
Nostalgia is, in a way, very much related to self-reflection. Because, for example, why, in general, the 20th century was so nostalgic in a way. Culturally, because I think it was maybe very much influenced by things like psychoanalysis, that you know you always have to think about your childhood or think about the past in order to, you know, find some reasons for things that are in the present, and also this general idea that you know you cannot understand the present without understanding the past. But I think that today, like when we're in this more retro stage, I think this is changing quite a bit, because there is no real need anymore for example, the contemporary popular culture to go back to the past, because it just has all kinds of appropriated forms from the past that are inscribed in the present, you know, but purely as forms, not as any attempts to kind of make sense of the past, you know, and so these forms of the past in contemporary popular culture, they're not like full-blooded phenomena, but more like, you know, living dead men, this kind of thing. So maybe this whole meta-nostalgia is also a sort of an early stage of a certain post-nostalgic state of mind, you know, that maybe if you always have those appropriated forms from the past in your present kind of culture, maybe there's no need anymore to think about the past, because you always have this retro kind of form in what surrounds you. Because we look at the pop culture of today, it's all about the things that we've seen like throughout maybe the second half of the 20th century, but it's without any kind of critical analysis or self-reflection, just borrowing them as such. So maybe that's, you know,
maybe that's the way to recycle things.
So maybe we can try to, you know, already start imagining this kind of post-nostalgic period where people will not have any kind of nostalgia to anything in the past, because it's already here, always, you know, but without any critical aspect to it.
So we need maybe to desentimentalize, like let's say the Soviet time also have this, people remember or they tend to remember like rough experiences of their parents or whatever in most buildings or so it's, if we are taking this thing out, so it's plain retro, like just the shapes.
Yeah. Well, I wanted to quote, I hope you haven't told that topic here before. Yesterday we had a chat with Yuri, and he actually kind of brought me to thinking about the issue a little bit, about the change in how we preserve and keep memory nowadays, having in mind the medialized kind of pools of memory that we have, the extensive digitalizing of things. And the way that they are spread and that they are accessed. So the memories and, you know, the objects that could provoke those memories now are, you know, kept and preserved in a completely different way. And that's going to continue. And I think this is a very important issue to think also for a curator who insists on working with the actual original objects. So.
And yesterday, Jurijus mentioned those short films from the Soviet time, and I also somehow just it reminds me Slavoj Žižek and other philosophers thoughts about the dreams of the others, and when that we actually maybe can't separate ourselves from this medialized or just shown the I don't know. Past or understanding of the past.
But I have a small anxiety rising that we fail our discussion about city and others. So I would
I really enjoy it.
Yeah, it's really very, very inspiring and very intriguing.
I think that's the same about if you demolish the building, you start to, you know, long for it. So whenever we decided to finish the discussion, everybody has a lot of things to say too.
So I think we still have an idea to discuss two other topics. Indra will present the topic of the third issue, the city breaking points. And I think we shall have some time also to discuss the fourth issue about the working title is the dissidence through architecture, because it was the title of the talk series, but we have an idea to expand it or to rename it, so we shall have also, we will be very fond to hear your comments.
So, not to be very strict about this annual discussion, I have to say that we have collected all of your contacts, so we will send some information afterwards and we can still continue the discussion if you have something to add. So. Now let's talk about the city.
Okay, so first of all, I'm very happy that we already have the invited the senior editor and moderator of our future seminar and workshop, so that I wouldn't have to work alone in this project. So I will be working with the philosopher Marius Miller, and whose research interest is theory and practices of everyday life, and who works on theoretical problems of urban studies, architectural transformations of the cities in the Middle East and Eastern Europe region, and he is also into visual phenomenon and film philosophy. And I'm an architect in practice, and a little bit architect in research, and also working on some exploratory walks in a context of architectural fun. So it will be, hopefully it will be an interesting combination of philosopher and architect working on the same project. So we'll see what happens, and only I regret that today Marius couldn't join us, so I will try my best to introduce what we will be doing next year. So we were not the creators of that talks, architectural talks, the city breakpoints. Sabina Grincevičiūtė and Aurimas Sasnauskas were the creators. So we were invited to join the project, and we were already given the product, the whole talk series. And I could shortly present what that series were about, who were the speakers, and then I will try to present what me and Marius are thinking about the future seminar, how we could develop that topic further. Okay, so this was the announcement of that talk series. And the name was The City, the Breakpoints, or Turning Points. It's under this discussion, but anyway, the initial name was Breakpoints. And it sounded like that. The city is one of the most controversial structures of civilization, an integral part of modern culture, often personalized, adored, and demonized. It is constantly changing, thriving, or declining. It is surprising or disappointing, and the permanent change keeps it as one of the most popular objects of research. The city and its physical expression is influenced by many factors: historical circumstances, natural conditions, demographics, financial, political power, even individual personalities. So if we consider the city as the system of those elements, the question arises, how is it changing along with changes of the constituents, with their decline or with the appearance or disappearance of the new ones? What other forces act on the cities? What events of the past have defined the present? And what awaits them in the future? When the system reaches equilibrium and stability, what are the breaking points that may dramatically alter or destroy the previous system? Or maybe the city is an organism where critical changes may cause mutations and transformations. So there were five speakers, and a few of them were changed, and we picked the speakers from the other talks. And so the leading one is Miles Fleming, Professor Miles Fleming, with the topic The 100 Years' War Towards a Global Narrative of Mass Housing. And he was a speaker of another talk series of Maria Los Cruz of Modern Heritages. But somehow this topic was so connected with the city that we were like that we got him here. So the other speaker, we steal it from the talk series of The Process, because he also he represents the other attitude, as Professor Miles Fleming is more a historian or theoretical. And now Matthias Rick, who used to work in a Ramblebor, he was talking about fleeting architecture and Ram's labor, instant urbanism. So those two leading persons, one with a historical and theoretical approach, another one who's a practitioner, and they somehow form that basis of the future development of this topic. So the others are three of them. Actually, Nerius himself was a speaker in that talk session, but it was fantastic talk, but his talk cannot be used because he already published, but he will continue in some different aspects. Okay, so another one was August van Oppen and Mark van Asselbalk, Open Source Urbanism. Then Adam Lobet and Etienne Turpin, Aberrant Architecture, Typologies of Practice, and Tim Rinitz, Less is More, Urban Design and the Challenge of Shrinking Cities. So we have such topics, and when Nerius analyzed this whole material, tried to put some theory upon it and to look how it could be conceptualized for the future seminar and workshop and the future thematics. So we developed the idea that the starting point is that the whole this project that we are into is that it should present, provoke, and encourage different discourses and ways of speaking about our selected topics. Nostalgia, modernism, nostalgia, criticism, and now if we are talking about the city, we also would like to present as many discourses as possible speaking about the same object. And unlike in previous cases where one on another group used to privatize the way of speaking about the city, here we are seeking to provide the possibility to hear as many voices and opinions as possible. So analyzing the existing material on topic of the city, it became obvious that it might be divided into two blocks and that it could be defined as some kind of contraposition or as it used to be called, contraposition between theoretical approach, which is represented by philosophers, sociologists, and the practitioners who are architects in this case. But this distinction that used to last quite for a long time now is obsolete or outdated, and is, in Nerius' words, it could be characterized by Henri Lefebvre's thesis that architects see the space as a pure detached segment, isolated from other parts of the city or its practice. And they see this pure segment as a space where he can form and build the building as a figure or statue. And so we are, in other words, saying the architect sees the pure empty space as a container which can be filled up. So following André Lefebvre, this kind of perception of space is assigned to architecture, architects, and it is this conception is kind of contradiction to the approach of the space of the space users, who never see the space as a detached, separated, isolated segment, but on the contrary, they practice the space and see it only as a segment of the junction of their own practices. So now it's getting clear that what Lefebvre was speaking about today is not so valid anymore, because architects now are working as the users of the space. They, of course, can see the space as an isolated segment when they want to design or project something, but in this case it is more important to speak that the breaking or turning points of the city are happening not in the physical tissue of the city, but in different and changing practices of using it. So in this project of publication and seminar, we will try to somehow in some creative and possible way to try to continue this tension between theory and practice, space creators, space users, and we'll try to expose several different approaches or attitudes, how the city can be practiced, how the city can be explored, and from both from the point of view of the specialist and the direct user of the city, I mean citizens, and not avoiding some personal approach. The most important thing will be to invite some inspiring or interesting people who can show some different aspects in unexpected angles without any cliché. So we'll see what will happen, and anyway, this sounds quite... the concept cannot be described in one or two sentences. It's still not very clear for us how it develops further. But anyway, we are now working on very technical details now, let's see, with the transcriptions of the talks and so on, and thinking about future seminar.
And that's good.
Okay, but now if moving on and speaking about those different ways of exploring the city, of understanding it, maybe I could speak a bit about what we are doing in the context of Archipandas, and not only in Archipandas, and just to show you examples of different approaches. And somehow it happened that all these projects, I will speak about three projects, and about different approaches, they are somehow connected with those sleeping districts or residential districts. And actually, in Tallinn, we heard a new term. One girl said that, no way, I don't agree that those districts are sleeping. No, they are not sleeping, they are just napping. In comparison with all those new suburban districts that are being developed today. But anyway, now it's somehow seen that getting clear that that topic about that sleeping districts is somehow becoming quite trendy. Don't know why, maybe because of the same nostalgia, or maybe because nobody spoils them as much as possible. And actually, it was the Archipandas initiative to organize the first excursions around the modernist residential districts, and those excursions had to follow that topic of the city. And me and my colleagues were invited to organize one of them, and actually the main reason was why we went there was that we understood that
somebody's.
That's the electronic mic. Mm. I'm sure. This is the sound of vibration. Because it's tonight, I think.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's a Gaida festival.
So we understood that we know nothing about those sleeping districts, and those are not the object of the interest where you could make a very traditional excursion where the guide who knows everything would guide the excursion, go around and tell everything by heart. So we decided to more to explore and to invite the architects of those districts to tell the stories of their own, to tell those things that were not written in books, and to know the attitude of the architect, his initial idea, and how they do they perceive now their own designs. And so we made a few excursions. One was around the whole prospect of cosmonauts, visiting 7 districts. It was impossible doing it shortly. It took 7 hours, I think. It was a real trip to nowhere or somewhere. But anyway, it was really interesting because we collected info from the primary sources, I mean, the architects, and it was really, really, really good experience. And another project was together with a European Humanitarian University, because they wanted to explore how other topics could be developed in Lesdini. I mean, okay, now I stopped. I forgot. I could read. But anyway, this book just was written on a basis of this explorative walk. Mm-hmm. And the other thing is what we are doing with K-Lab today. And K-Lab is Karoliniškės Architecture Fund. It's an open experimental space.
Platform.
Yeah. In a typical TV tower block in Karoliniškės. And the task of the K-Labs team is to encourage more positive attitude towards sleeping district. And each member of this team is working on some particular stereotype about that sleeping district. I mean, we picked up some stereotypes that are alive in the public opinion, and we somehow tried to provoke and do series of actions that would destroy or deconstruct those stereotypes. And me, I'm working on the stereotype that all those sleeping districts are the same. Yulia is working on stereotype about there could be no nostalgia for those districts, and that people are detached from their living spaces. And we're doing a series of expeditions or explorative walks, and we try to explore different layers of that sleeping district to realize how the residents appreciate their living environment. Because I think it's the most important thing, because we may read many books and may hear the opinion of architect or sociologist what those districts are all about, but those people who live here for 40 years, they have an absolutely different approach. And they see things that we do not see. And if we hear them, we may change a little bit our opinion or public opinion about those decisions.
So all this Key Lab actually is experimental platform. We don't know what is going to be afterwards, but anyways, it's like a play, you know, provocative way of just involving people and seeing what do they do and what do they think, because there is not many people who are living for 40 years already. We had only two of them who came in and tell their stories. And actually we have to struggle to invite every single person who is living around, but it's also the case. We are also having some things to say about that, you know, why people are not coming, why they are asking, what political campaign is it, and so on, what they are afraid of. So this is really interesting case, and I think the result of it anyway somehow is going to be included into the next topic. We don't know how and you know what is going to be the result, so we are really experimenting with that. We are changing our view all the time, but I think it could be the case.
But are there any like local initiative groups in these areas emerging, like kind of?
Not yet.
Grassroots level.
You know, we call ourselves like a grassroots, you know, initiative, which is actually not because nobody. And we are, none of us is living there actually. But it's really, you know, there are some initiatives over there in the club, like, you know, one girl decided to make reading room or something like that. She invites a lot of people, they are reading books and they are discussing it. So that's very first things to do. Some you know, old ladies are just planning to dig something over there and you know, to do something.
Because in Italy there's also neither in this panel area, there's always the artists and artists who go there and try to engage local people in discussions. There is nothing like that that is coming. There are these community movements, the neighborhood movements in this wooden house area, right? Mm-hmm. Like Kadriak area, you know, things like that, but not never in
these.
Yeah, exactly.
We are not proud of the location with it.
There is no community in general.
There are people who are proud, but they just, I don't know.
It's not about the pride. It's not about the pride. It's about communicating together.
But if we talk about the Žvėrynas or Užupis or
it's related, yeah, of course. They are trying to protect their environment. That's how they are united usually in Žvėrynas.
Because they are, maybe they fight and they work for. To live in this, let's say, area.
Working in the protest lab, I really realized that, you know, to unite people, you have to fight against something. Otherwise, it's not possible to unite people. You know, when you lose your enemy, there is nothing in common between that group. But actually, you know, when we are trying to do something positive about it, I mean, to evoke the ideas about what can we do in that area, it's a really difficult question. And we realize that there is not so many local people. I mean, people are renting flats usually, so they don't care about the environment. There are a lot of foreigners, so they have kind of, you know, fight between each other because somebody doesn't speak Lithuanian and somebody doesn't speak Russian, and you know, they don't agree with each other. And apartments are really huge usually, you know, like a lot of neighborhoods are just sharing the same space. So that could be the reason why they are not well connected. Like, you know, to change even the door or to change, I don't know, the code of the door, it's very difficult because it's 100 flats or something like that. So it's really difficult to communicate for them together. And there is real untrust, actually. When we started, everybody's just curious, but they are afraid to come in, and because they are thinking it can be religious stuff or political stuff. And they are all like, who is paying for that? The question, usually.
How does it work? Don't you have this like apartment unions? We call them Estonia. So basically, usually it's the one building is like a.
It's voluntary in Lithuania.
It's voluntary?
Yeah. You can form one, but if you don't agree between the residents, you have just a house administration from local authorities.
Because I think that's how it usually works in this. That's why there are no bigger groups, because there are already smaller groups that like, maintain one of the buildings and then discuss all the issues in this one building, which could be 100 apartments or so. Mm-hmm. But this issue has been also studied a little bit in Estonia. We had the architects
to center or the union, I don't remember who organized it, but in Arnhem and in Narva we had this urban forum, Linna forum, called like both 2 days workshop where there were gathered like municipality people, architects, like all them together and discussing the issue and also proposing some ideas, I think.
They should have a website.
Yeah,
they
I
have
think
a book.
There is a book and yeah. There are some videos uploaded, so I could send you the link. Also.
Would be great.
I can go back to the project, the mm-hmm. publication, and mm-hmm. the subtitle of Breaking or Turning Points. I think that could be a good starting point because it's a, as you have said, trendy, and mm-hmm. it's new and it's forward looking. To search for positive points or mm-hmm. positive issues in the residential districts, and because it's a new trend in many big cities, mm-hmm. reevaluating mm-hmm. the possibilities of sleeping districts. And I would suggest for the seminar probably there's a trendy book which was published mm-hmm. now, and it's by Strelka Institute in Moscow by Kuba Sutnotek. He's a Polish. He's such a Beliaeva forever. But what he did actually, he researched immaterial heritage of this one of the sleeping district, which is not architecturally exceptional, but it had cultural people who lived there, artists, etc. Mm-hmm. But his forward or avant garde idea is not that. But he did this, his book. As in a form of nomination file for UNESCO World Heritage. Everything was written in a very ironic form, but filled in a very strict form of application. And in this way we can see 2 ironical points. One is that he ridicules the nomination files of very important international institutions. On the other hand, he is doing that, we don't need any evaluation from abroad or from international, from institution. We value this district, and we will preserve or we will care about it regardless. Are we put on any list of heritage if somebody gives finances? So this grassroots, in a way, movement. Mm-hmm. I think it would be interesting to...
Also very playful.
Also very playful, yeah. And breaking those very strict evaluation forms.
But what you were talking about is more about the ways of exploring the same topic, more or less. So we can have more ways, not only excursions or doing some labs. But also we can think in this upcoming topic about another ways of exploring the city, of researching the city, which would be also a very interesting point. You know, like, I don't know what that could be, but maybe to collect, you know, different initiatives and to put them to one table and exchange their experience of communicating and expressing ideas in a lot of different ways.
Or maybe just inviting people who represent very different specialities mm-hmm. and to put them in one space and to ask to talk about the same thing and to compare how different people
mm-hmm. see
speak
it from
and
angle.
See the same thing in different angles.
Mm-hmm. So more or less, I just spread the those roots or booklets you've made for the Architecture Excursion Fund. There's only once for the district, as districts, as I understand.
Yes,
so
yes,
you've made
yes.
much
there
more. I don't know how many excursions you have already made, but it was plenty of them during past years, which is the way to explore the city as well. Which is always, you never know what you're going to find.
But you also studied Vajgorizma and you compared the 2 districts, I understand. You compared Vajgorizma in Tallinn and then...
Vozdina in Vilnius, yeah?
I'm curious, maybe... What were the results
There are no results. It was actually it was really hard to understand what we were doing. Actually, the whole team was really strange because there were two architects, one philosopher who lost his way somewhere, one urbanist, one DJ, one person who's into gardening. And few the girl who studies philology, and we were all trying to develop our own plots on this bike, and we from Lesdine we brought some topics that we were interested about and tried to develop them in the bike, but it was impossible. So it all turned out to just into some running around the pond and trying to test the sounds in that open space and so on. Well, I'm speaking in an ironic way because, well, there are no concrete results yet. Mm-hmm. We'll see.
Yeah, but then what was the goal or the expectation when you sort of set the task to go and explore the city on this particular route? So if you didn't have a clear goal, so you cannot actually get the result you are doing.
Well, it was some kind of the example how experiment can fail. If you don't know very, very strictly from the start what you want to do. Because we had several very amorphic ideas, and we didn't know how to how to deal with them. But the same was with Lesdine. We were just talking and walking, and then we somehow sat down, concentrated, and gave some speculative or maybe not ideas. And now they look quite interesting, or maybe just provocative, to think about the same district in some other way. And I'm sure that those first impressions, when you it seems you are doing nothing or something strange, and then you sit down and concentrate and try to summarize what you've done, it might bring you to some concrete result. So it's still in a process.
So that's a method to be without methodology.
Yes, we all agreed that everyone from our team, nobody knew and nobody understands how the methodology works. Even the philosopher who lost his plot.
It's a really cosmic thing. So all of you are gonna have the experience of doing we don't know what to do today with all this excursion, I guess. No, this excursion is going to be more strict, of course, but that's the way.
And if you had, for instance, an agreement with the second Lithuanian TV program, which is full of just a repeat of old programs, and you would suggest then that we have this guided tour. Five of us, we are from different, you know, perspectives. We are taking a camera, and you know, we want to make it as a video, which is a, you know, live discussion. Would that have formatted differently your way through, you know, along the route, or it would have been the same?
Of course it will be different.
Yes, but then you just didn't take the thing seriously.
Okay. Well, we would be more ready for that. But I think that how could you get ready if you don't know what you are talking about? This was the preparation for.
It's just, you know, that I thought there might be other, you know, also tools, you know, to be added to this exploration, you know, and especially if one thinks about reaching the community. Not maybe uniting it. Uniting is
it's impossible.
But reaching the communities. So, you know, there have been these, you know, contemporary art projects as well about building a community radio, which also gives you information about which doctor is actually better, you know, the dentist or the pediatrician, or, you know, the, you know, which shop sells, you know, certain goods. But then you also involve a certain thing, which is about architecture, about, let's say, these, the fountains, if you want, you know, or other things, you know, so that's already, that's like a different, you know, approach to kind of dealing with these.
Yeah, talking about Karoliniškas, we are doing that. I mean, we are experimenting with the ways of communicating, so it seems to be a very good virtual platform, actually, because in Facebook it really works.
So
when you come to the spot, it works less, and you know, you meet less people, but when somebody visits our Facebook, where every day we put a lot of photos and so on, and everybody's tagging each other and they're discussing, so... But it's still, I am positive about that, because I think that this Facebook community can last longer, much longer than the physical space. So we will see what the outcome will be. So we are exploring different ways of starting from, you know, at the very beginning to open it. We invited orchestra to play, just come from another, different angles from the surrounding, just and play in front of the door, just... So everybody was following the orchestra, what is going on, and came to see. And yesterday it was a movie represented, so we made red carpet, you know, the light and paparazzi and stuff like that to attract people. So we are playing with different ways, of course, and it's interesting, you know, the way people react to it, because in the center people are used on artistic projects, and in the smaller communities they are used on that, but over there they are like, what is going on, you know, is it political issue or what, so it's
so
also the case.
It was this, one of the flash bar stations.
Yes,
into one of these, you know, closed, huge yards among, you know, sleeping walls.
Yeah, it was amazing, actually. They put a lot of efforts into it to make this. And also B part is working this way, you know, making some events to attract people, as I understand.
What is the social structure in these areas? Because in Tallinn we could say quite clearly that, you know, Õismäe is middle class and Lasnamäe is a Russian population, which is usually equal with working class, although they might not always be. But is there some similar division? Because that's the interesting thing in this panel areas. They again, you have a quite similar approach to urbanism and design, but then you have the social structure could have been different, and Lasnam also had in Soviet time more, or the Uisman had more of these cooperative houses, which were actually, you know, built by the with the money of the inhabitants themselves and so on.
So that was initiative question, as I understand, when we started to think about this renovation programs and so on, we realized that actually we don't really know who is living there. I mean, there is no such a research in that. So that's why we based our basis in the place, to try to make a research. So now I would say that there is something like 20% of residents from, you know, who are living more than 20 years over there. A lot of them are rented houses. And it's a huge population of Russians, and you know, it's a mix of everything. There are still some intellectuals who just couldn't afford to go to another places. They are still there from some, I mean, from the past. But there is not many people who are just living like a third generation in the same apartment or something like that. So it's the case. It's interesting, you know, to try to research, because we cannot reach all of them. We cannot reach a lot of people. The plan was to be based in one of the apartments in the block, like in a real apartment, and to work first of all with one corridor, then with the house, and then to make it bigger and bigger, but it was impossible, so that's why it's in that place where you can rent the space in the building, like, you know, for the shop or something like that. So it's a bit different, and then we are communicating not with one house, but with several at the same time. So I think there are quite a lot of young families and students, but students who are not like this fashionable students, like who can afford, you know, live in the center and do stuff. So they are not spending much time in that area, but they can show us a lot of interesting things. Like 2 weeks ago we had excursion to the points, we call that points, you know, the places where they sell illegal alcohol, for example, and so on. So there are plenty of them, you know, like the place for buying ice creams. It's written ice cream on the window, and there is no ice cream inside, and it never was. So it's also the way to explore, and those young people are showing us these places, which is also interesting.
And don't you think that you are creating some sort of, like, not like a conflict, but I grew up in that, as I said, in Fabianski. And it's actually quite strange how, just by different architecture, you separate yourself from, let's say, Pašilaičiai, Šeškinė, mm-hmm. and then other districts. Mm-hmm. And now you are talking about, let's say, Karolinskis, and I just thought, okay, so, and what kind of people are living, let's say, in Naujamis? And I understood that it's different to understand Naujamis because he's just so... so different in a way, like different architecture, mm-hmm. and it's not so clearly shaped as, let's mm-hmm. say, Karoliniškės, mm-hmm. and it's like kind of uniform, mm-hmm. and you are putting people in the same uniform. You are saying, oh, you are living in Karoliniškės, so can you participate in our key lab or whatever? Mm-hmm. And people from Viršuliškės, what? It's you know, it's like mm-hmm. It's quite strange. Mm-hmm. Just for me to understand that it's you are not as I said to be proud of let's say mm-hmm. Living in Žirinas or in Naujamis or in other it will make sense. But when you were talking about Karoliniškės, I'm not sure that people are picking Karoliniškės to live
to be proud of.
Yeah.
Well, that's.
I'm very much interested in the results too, because we talked about utopia yesterday, but it seems for me like contemporary utopia. Mm-hmm. What you are doing.
Yeah. We are not afraid to fail in this, of course.
The least defined residential area, probably, mm-hmm. in this.
That's why we have chosen this spot, of course.
Because the result, of course, is to research the area. Like an anthropologist who is based in that community and mm-hmm. has to stay there not less than 3 months mm-hmm. to spend time in the community. Or do you have any mission mm-hmm. to bring the community together or mm-hmm. to give the added value to the residential? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
At the very beginning, the idea was to bring community together, and we had this utopia, but after 1 month of struggling, we decided that, okay, we are doing research, because, you know, people are getting involved very slowly, and if the project is only for 4 months, you know, you get only started, and then you quit, you close the door, and you shut it down, it's not, you know, it's somehow it's not a good thing to do. So afterwards, we decided that, okay, we are only experimenting with that, and we are, you know, trying to involve community to make something, you know, to show them possibility that they can do something themselves. We are involving them, we are going to leave their Facebook and so on, and if somebody says, okay, I want to do this or that, we are going to help them to develop it. So, and talking about being proud of Karoliniškės or something, of course, there are a lot of people from another districts coming, even more actively than from Karoliniškės. And another thing is, yes, we are talking about uniforms. We are, for example, Indrė is making some souvenirs out of those pixels, you know, you can find on the balconies. So then you can go and be proud that you are, okay, you are from Karoliniškės and you have the pixel. You are from the house which has white pixels, for example, and another one has red pixels. And we are just playing with that, with a little bit of irony, of course, but we want to see, you know, what the real idea is, because, you know, when you're sitting somewhere by the table or internet somewhere in the middle of the city, like in the center, you have different point of view. You imagine that there is only homeless people who are living there and nobody cares about their environment. And when you go to Karoliniškės, you see that people are growing not only flowers but also vegetables under the balconies. You realize that, you know, there are a strong community of old ladies who are digging up the ground and they are growing unbelievable, you know, zucchinis and stuff like that, and they are bringing it to us and showing like a present. So, you know, it's, I think the part of regeneration in this sense is to make you care about the closest environment, because if you are taking care of your, I don't know, outdoor place, your courtyard and so on, then you start to care, you know, more and more about the city. It is the way to understand it and enjoy, maybe. That's my opinion. I'm not pretty much involved in that, but
putting the label is actually it adds another aspect. I just remember mm-hmm. like all those districts like people of my age, let's say, and it was like all those fights against like ravers and others, and actually they was fighting district against another district, and that was weird actually, yeah. And it's.
But in Karoliniška's case, it's very close to Lazdiny, and everybody knows that Lazdiny got first Lenin Prize and so on. Everybody is proud to be over there. You know, it's like good district and bad, and they are very close, and they have very similar qualities actually. So that's, you know, the way to, let's make us being from Karoliniška's, we are as good as you are, and something like that. And we, I don't know, it would be really great to see if PR company can change that.
It's good as in Lesdini, in quality, let's say. If you compare like bricks and then whatever, like.
Architecture itself is the same, I would say, but urban planning is much different. Yeah. Which makes all that sense. Actually, apartments are almost the same.
No, but it's like one part, but another is like this red one. I think it's a bigger.
The density is bigger,
but the
model of the buildings are epic.
So there is not so many differences, and they are close. They share the same public spaces, like parks and so on. So,
but the people is very important.
Yeah.
Because if you go to the history, it was much more working class district.
Mm-hmm.
Because for me, what I remember from Karoliniška is the bus number 25, which connected Karoliniška to Zhemie Panerivruk in the factory area.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the identity of mm-hmm. the. And whereas Lesdina was much more mixed and with young specialists, like we could now call them middle class.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it also gives stigma to
the
area and to the
yes. Yeah, but you have to deal with that, of course, because in the near future we are going to have a lot of problems, like, you know, having those ghettos over there. It's very near future, I guess. So, you know, we have to explore first of all and then try to do something afterwards. That's the initial idea about that, I guess. But I think we don't have much time to talk about dissidents.
Maybe over the lunch? Or
yeah, about that bright future.
But
I really like that, you know, bright future.
Very short
is
that.
But it's based on this very recent lecture series that was called this Control Architecture.
And this topic is, of course, formed by Ina Weissman, because she was the main curator. The lectures
mainly concerned like paper architecture from the Cold War era, as I understand. So I don't know what I would like to see in the essays is maybe some kind of redefinition of what is dissidence after the fall of the Berlin Wall, or also
Or at all, we do not completely agree with the concept of dissidence through architecture, even during the Soviet time, because architecture being one of the hard arts, if we can say, because it couldn't exist without a state infrastructure. So only paper architecture might be. Architects did not work into the drawer. So our idea is to expand this or to rename, because it's a very controversial term, dissidence through architecture or dissidence in architecture. We try to think about the concept of critical practices in architecture. So, or we are very, very open to this seminar, and if you can suggest any good researcher or person who is working on the subject, would like to invite.
Anyway, I was very interested for a long time in this architect and performance artist from Stockholm, which is called International Festival. So I think maybe that's maybe a nice starting point to start from like architectural / artistic practice
doing the same as a new community art or some kind of organistic practice.
And one of the ideas which are rather trendy is the topic for the next year's conference of European Architectural Historians Forum is architecture in art, and what Tallinn School did before, Leonard Lapin did, we can also discuss this idea, architecture in art, because in art there were many critical practices, or this is also that then not only as a paper architecture, but painting or the representatives in painting, and we could think about artists who featured architecture or features, you know.
So if you have any spontaneous comments or associations, please do this. Because you were the one presenting.
Yeah, I was presenting, but I think it was quite an interesting occasion that exactly, because Vilhelm Künnapu was one of these kind of figures from the Tallinn School, but of course he preferred to speak about his work after.
Yeah, he preferred.
and speak about what he's doing nowadays, and I think this whole, I don't know how it worked with the other speakers, because I heard only the talk about Bogdan Bogdanovich, but it was presented by a historian. Mm-hmm. You had also Vladimir Kirpichev, I think. Basically, I think this Vilhelm's case was quite characteristic for me, in a way, of the fate of the paper architect. And this kind of, you know, to think what has carried on and what has, you know, been left behind, because he's nowadays into this totally kind of new age practice and rhetoric and this kind of semi-religious practice. And I think you also discussed the idea of inviting Vilhelm to Tallinn Architecture Biennale as a speaker, but we're afraid that he would devote.
Yeah, we skipped the idea after we discussed it a little bit, because he would only discuss the contemporary issues that interest him. They don't.
I think it was a great performance. It was
it was
excellent as a performance, exactly. That, you know, and somehow telling of this generation for me. He at the same time is doing still buildings, very successful practitioner. He does big commissions, and that was very kind of, you know, immediately after the independence started to do big buildings. So the paper practice, which was formed in this series as dissident, actually paved the way for his career in the 1990s.
That's what I would be very interested in, the topic, the way from dissidents to establishment, because almost all of them were established, many of those. I
would say
that
Lapin, of course, stayed in opposition.
But he turned to more like an artist.
He would still occasionally publish very critical articles in the media. Mm-hmm. Regarding architecture and spatial practices, and kind of criticizing this purely utilitarian approach to privatization and the decline of the public space. So in that sense, he has maintained his very critical position.
But you think maybe Dennis Wint would be interesting in that sense?
Well, Dennis Wint was one of these artists who was. But he was more following this kind of romantic 19th century myth of an artist who is always a part of everyday life. In that sense, his position never changed. So he had this position in the Soviet time that the artist is away from art stands apart from life, and he has this position nowadays. So
the opposite is quite interesting, though, isn't it? Where you have figures who operated as dissident architects, whatever they are, but they choose to become politicians mm-hmm. in 1919. There's obviously something in architecture which is about ego and ambition mm-hmm. and a desire to change the world.
Mm-hmm.
So you, in Poland you have Czesław Bielecki, in Hungary you have Laszlo Rajk, in Romania you have Cielak. All of these figures choose to become politicians mm-hmm. and to give up architectural practice to some extent. That seems to be an interesting social
mm-hmm. There was one case in Estonia, there was Ignat Juk, who is a politician, who was converted in the late 1980s mm-hmm. and become, actually through Architects Union, mm-hmm. they made his career.
But still practicing, which is not so good.
and then there was a few figures, I think, in Latvia.
And one more interesting thing is about, but it's a permanent topic we are discussing all those 2 days. Change of mind. Nothing changes historically, but interpretation mm-hmm. changes. Those people, for example, I talked to Yuri Avakumov, and he said, "Oh, now they label me a dissident. I wasn't a dissident at all." If we take those times, 80s or late 70s, when they were calling, I think, themselves dissidents and believing that they are doing this.
I'm not so sure. Because they would, they recognized their being a very oppositional, but they their aim was still to change the architecture institution. To intervene, and they actually, it was quite a similar schema as in Tallinn. There was this Tallinn school became established in the Architectural Union in 79, and in Moscow it was after the Perestroika, but in 87 in the Congress they took over in a way. So it wasn't a dissident. I mean, they were blamed for, they said that don't rock the boat and so mm-hmm. on. But I'm not so sure, because our whole work in media at that time, so it was very much these discussions over Russian avatar, and this knowledge comes from there, so it's all kind of intertwined.
Very, very.
And they don't have contacts with this non-conformist art. They know, of course, them, but they are not directly in contact. So they divide themselves apart from that.
Well, if one takes a specific personality, so it's one thing to speak about the person as a dissident, mm-hmm. but if one wants to single out the dissident practices,
mm-hmm.
So that could be another kind of cut through, mm-hmm. because the same person might have had some dissident practices, that he developed, and something completely different. And just labeling or naming somebody from a dissident, this is the issue of another context. But
that's the thing,
this was for me.
Kind of dissident figures who their whole life is devoted to this kind of, they are like,
probably they are
sacrificing
be.
Their life.
Yes, definitely. There might be such people, but I mean, when I only watched this part of the talks on, on the internet, came for moderation. But then, this question exactly always was the most important for me. So, can we actually describe really what is a dissident practice in architecture? That's the main point, I'm sure we can, in a certain context. Even more that personally, I think that they may appear countries and schools where there are no dissident practices mm-hmm. in architecture. It just would show that the grid of Eastern Europe doesn't work in that sense. That if this is an Eastern European country, it should have had dissident architecture practice. Maybe it shouldn't. you know, then another question is why, and which hybrid, you know, things could be somehow also related to the dissident architecture practices. Well, that's just sharing something of what, you know, the thoughts that came to me watching the stream on the internet.
Thank you.